Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lunchtime Wisdom on the With Insights Radio Network with your host, Iggy Garcia, Mark Matheny. Sit back and relax, grab a sandwich, listen to some of the coolest hosts on the internet. Food for your soul, food for your heart. Now, on to the show.
Are you like a crazy person?
I'm quite sure they will say so.
And good Tuesday afternoon, everyone. This is Lunchtime Wisdom. I am one of your hosts, Mark Matheny. Our co-host, Iggy Garcia, will be calling in momentarily here. With the crazy energies out there, if you are interested in a personal astrological reading, you can get a hold of me at www.twofishesastrology.com. It's T-W-O. With a reading, you get a copy of your birth chart, a small report going over some of the bigger details of your chart, your transits or the planetary movements you can expect for the next 6 months. And then we do an hour and 15-minute reading where I go over the finer points of your chart, and we look at the key things in your birth chart. We will go over your nodes, North Node, Future, Destiny, the energies you are to embrace to help move forward. And we will look at your South Node, the past karmic issues being worked on this lifetime. And we will look at your Pluto, which correlates with your soul. And I will give you the lowdown on what your life's purpose is this go around, and we will give you details and map out for you good ways, good paths for you to proceed upon and to just astrological life coaching, we'll call it. It helps you kind of figure out where you're at and what your weak points and strong points are, and where to the best path to travel, we will say. These readings are $75. For the hour and 15-minute reading and the reports. And I will also look at additional charts if you have a child or loved one or others that you are interested in getting the lowdown on, potential partners. Also, I have a couple. You can find me on Facebook also. You can email me at twofishesastrology@gmail.com, and we can schedule a reading for you. Readings are available by email, Facebook Messenger, Skype, telephone, in person, or I can also record an audio file of the reading for you and send it to you along with answers to any questions that you have. So, there are lots of I'm seeing lots of doom and gloom predictions again. This is just another cycle of the fear-mongering media and stuff out there. I've heard lots of things about different dates in October. I do not foresee any great calamities or anything happening in this upcoming month of October. There are some low-lying energies, I guess we'll talk about. Right now we kind of have a stellium in the sign of Virgo. Let me give you the exact details here. Mars and Jupiter are conjunct at the moment. Mars is at 15 degrees Virgo. Jupiter is at 14 degrees Virgo. This alignment was exact on Saturday. It is now separating a little bit. We also have Venus in the sign of Virgo. So all three of these are working together. So the good thing is, as I've mentioned before, the ability to fix and change things, make corrections, analyze, figure out where the problems are and issues that need fixed. So that is one of the good things about the energy. The difficult part to handle of this is kind of lends to a propensity to freak out a little bit. Virgo ruled by the planet Mercury. The Virgo energy is very analytical, very antsy. Very much affects the brain, the mental processes. Virgo has to do with crisis. Virgo, being a great editor and analyzer, tends to find the problems in everything and leads to analyzation needing to be done to fix problems. So the difficult part of this is it can be easy to kind of spin out of control a bit. And we can kind of get obsessed with problems. We can get obsessed with crisis and chaos and disruption. So that can be one of the difficult things. So we just have to remember, we fix one thing at a time. Pick whatever thing can make the most improvement, or find the thing that is causing the most disruption, and take one thing at a time and find the problem and fix it and move to the next thing. It gets very easy to fall into a cycle of worry and maybe creating drama and chaos, whereas if we just take a chill pill and find the quiet spot a little bit there, it can make for a little more pleasant journey, we'll say, as we make our way through these, I wouldn't say it's been an interesting year, but Yes, I do. I do not see any major upheavals. All the chaos is kind of self-contained this month, if you will. So, on that note, I believe we have our co-host here.
Get it together, Iggy.
Hey, how's it going? Just finishing up with one of my clients here, and I apologize. If he's back, let me know, okay?
Oh, no, I think it sounds okay on my end anyways. If anyone out there, if you have any audio issues, just send us a message in the chat room. Our guest will be Thomas Moon Eagle at the 12:30 mark. I have a post to his website, and his he has a new ebook out on Kindle and Nook formats called Drumming Down the Runes, Walking the 24 Roads. So we will have him on shortly. So how's it going today?
It's going pretty good. I think everybody at my end is having mental breakdowns or they're melting down. I'm just trying to take that melted form and try to put it back together a little bit. So it's been a busy morning for me.
Yes, I agree. Very, very hectic couple days on this end also. So, yeah, I was just kind of talking about that Virgo energy that we kind of talked about last night during the show. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of... It can be difficult to keep the cool, if you will, with some of the energy that's out there.
And, you know, Mark, what I noticed was people that I was working with today, is there was a common theme about blaming, you know, somebody else for their situation. And, you know, when you take that mirror and you flash it in their face and you know, they tell you a story, well, you don't know what I've been through, honey, or whatever. And then you go, you know, honey, you don't know what I've been through. So let me tell you something real quick, you know, nobody cares about your story. I had to be that blunt today. I mean, nobody cares about your story. Why? Because they're too busy with their own story to care about your story. Yeah, they have pity and they'll feel bad for you, but you know what? In the end, it's really what you tell yourself and how you're going to, you know, work your way out of those processes. No one can get you out of the hole. You know, you have to literally have to work, want to get out and see things for how they really are, and that's difficult for people to look at themselves and say, you know what, I'm an asshole, you know? And no wonder no one likes me. But no one's willing to say that. Everybody's trying to sugarcoat things. And, you know, I'm not a sugarcoating type of person to begin with. If you want the blunt answer, I will give it to you. And you know what? If you're angry, you get upset with me, well, I'll apologize now. Here's a disclaimer. You asked me to tell you how I perceive you. So that's kind of how we had to do today. Today was one of those let's get real moments where, you know, you're not having breakthrough. And then you're wondering why. Because you're telling yourself the same crap over and over. You're telling yourself, you know, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. Yeah. You know, it gets old. People get tired of hearing that shit. And, you know, that's kind of had to be today. It had to be really, I guess, I hate to say it, Donald Trump about it.
Right.
So, but, you know, that's just how it was with these particular clients. And I had to be, and you know what, it snapped something in them. You know, it made them say, wow, do you see me like that? I said, well, no, that's how I perceive you. That's how I experience you. There's a difference. How I'm experiencing you is one way, and how I perceive you is another. You know, I can experience you however I want to experience you. How I'm perceiving how I'm experiencing you is another thing. So it was one of those things you just have to, you know, you have to self-moderate and self-talk and self-coach and work through it. If you keep saying to yourself, you're going to have these type of results, this always happens to me, oh, blah, blah, woe's me. I always seem to get the same result. No one listens to me. Why does everybody walk all over me? Well, sometimes the answer is pretty evident. It's right in front of you. Things repeat. There's patterns. You have patterns, and you teach people how to treat you. And that was a painful lesson. That's a painful lesson for myself, too, to learn.
Yes. I agree. That's a a doctor. I'm not always a fan of Dr. Phil, but that's a quote that he has said that I share. You teach people how to treat you, and with all this Virgo energy, it's very easy to see all the things that are wrong and all the things that aren't functioning properly, and it can very easily, you know, we start spinning those circles in our brain, and it can get very easy to just get caught up in just the overthinking and overanalyzing of things, and it can make everything feel really big and sort of overwhelming, which is where
absolutely.
Need to just kind of slow down a little bit, and it's like, you know, I'm not a psychic, but you know, the statistical odds are that the sun will come up tomorrow, and
yeah.
there'll be another day to fight. So,
right.
So take what you can, finish what you can, you know, get what you can done. And then, you know, as you fix one thing at a time, the mountain starts to shrink, and it can be it gets very easy to get into that cycle of blaming other people for or you know, companies we work for, governments or whatnot, for all of our woes. And it's like and maybe there's a little bit of truth in some of those, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, most things, it's stuff that we tolerate or put up with that we don't say anything about that causes a lot of our misery.
Yeah, and you know what? I think if people would just take inventory of all the good things that they do and they have created, I don't think we in our society, it's kind of like, well, what are you going to do for me today, you know, versus what you did for me yesterday. But yesterday's gone, and I get that, and tomorrow's gone. But, you know, take inventory individually as, you know, what have you accomplished? What have you done? What, you know, what is it that makes you happy? What's your bliss? What keeps you moving in the morning? So many of us dwell in the past, and we dwell so long in the things that happened to us that it becomes so real, and it becomes so ingrained in our belief system that we carry it into the next relationship, into the next friendship, you know, into the next romance we're in. And then we're good for one moment, and then next thing you know, we're like, whoa, where'd this person come from? Well, that person's always been there. That person just didn't come out of nowhere. Finally, they just let their guard down. They felt comfortable enough. You know, it's one of my clients I told today, you remind me of somebody who is a big fish in a little pond. Imagine yourself being an athletic football player. You're a great football player. You went to college, but you didn't get drafted. But yet, you play in the flag football league, and you dominate this flag football league, you know? You're running and you're scoring, and then all your friends tell you, hey, you ought to be in football. You ought to try out for the NFL. But the only reason you don't try out for the NFL is because you don't have the confidence. You don't have the courage. You don't think you're good enough. So you stay in your little pond and you dominate it, and then eventually that little pond dries out because everybody moves on to their things, and you're still stuck there in the pond. You know, you're the only fish in there, and the pond's dry, and you're in this little waddle of water, and then you're like, oh, everybody left me, or this and that. And so I was trying to explain to him, and he got it, you know, and it was good to see that he understood that he's like a very talented person amongst a group of non-talented people in his field. So how do you get moving? You challenge yourself. You move into the next phases. You get into the bigger pond, and you move around until wherever you feel comfortable. But he was a big fish in a small, small, small pond, and, you know, he looked amazing in it. But he didn't feel amazing, and that's what we were trying to break through.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, it's
and there's lots of us like that.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I have to remind myself at times to keep challenging myself and moving on to, you know, expanding and moving on to bigger areas. Because we can get stuck or comfortable in certain things, and we have to, you know, keep evolving, keep moving forward, you know, to not get kind of stuck in the little pond, if you will, I guess. So it's important
right.
to keep testing ourselves and to keep pushing ourselves, Because, you know, there is a, you know, humans kind of have a, we have a tendency to get lazy sometimes, where it's like, oh, okay, I did this. It's like, okay, I can stop and relax now or whatnot. And
That's huge. That's a huge factor for a lot of people. I mean, I've done that before, you know, where I feel comfortable and the next thing I'm like, wow, I'm not, you know, totally get that. I get that concept. Totally. But, you know, these are good people. These are good people just trying to make it through the world. But, you know, we've had this conversation about, you know, self-talk, and I think how we talk to ourselves is super important. It's not really what other people really tell us. It's how we dwell on the things that they tell us and how long we stay there. And then if we take ownership of it. You know, sometimes we want to hear, you know, sometimes we ask people, you know, who are unqualified to give us their opinion. You know, it's like going, it's like a millionaire coming to Iggy and say, hey, so how'd you make your million? Well, I didn't make my million. Oh, sorry, I should ask somebody else, you know? We ask unqualified people a lot for answers to different things, and all they can give us is their opinion on how they experience things. So no wonder we have such messes in our world sometimes. We ask mom and dad about a field that we want to go in, but mom and dad don't know that field, so they encourage you to go into teaching because that's where they were at. And then you get into teaching, and the next thing you know, you hate being a teacher, and you're burned out, and you're frustrated, because you actually wanted to be a doctor or whatever, you know. And you should have followed. I think sometimes we just have to follow our inner voice. We have this inner voice. We all have it. This calling, this longing, this urging to do something what's right for us. And sometimes we're such loyal people. Human beings are so loyal to people who love us that we do things in order to appease them, to teach them and show them that we're good, that we can be part of this club, be part of the group. And, you know, so many people do things out of loyalty instead of doing it out of just respect and honor that, you know, they find themselves, you know, doing some atrocious things. I mean, the world's a very big example of that. You know, how when we get into war situations and when we get into, you know, turning the other cheek to someone who needs help, you know, we're huge about that. And, I mean, we do that because, good example, if you work for a company and they told you to go fire somebody and you know that that person doesn't deserve to be fired, why would you be the one to go fire them?
Right.
You know, we do stuff like that. We do stuff like that to protect our ass sometimes. And, you know, because, and that's when we don't play the martyr victim, when we have to protect ourselves. But yet, if you ask somebody, hey, if there's one lifeboat left on the boat, what would you, and there's two people left, and only one person can get on, how many people would actually say, I'll take that lifeboat, sorry for your luck? Most people will go, hey, you get on and I'll figure something out. There is no figuring out. You're going to die. That's just the result in this particular little scenario we're creating here. But so many of us live in the martyrism, you know, capacity. We always feel like we have to help. We have to volunteer. We have to take care of other people. We have to martyr because, you know, we're not worthy or we didn't give enough in the past life or in this life. You know, sometimes you got to take the boat, the raft, and say, you know what? Sorry, dude. It's kind of like there was a scene in Titanic. Remember the... It was like the host of the ship, the guy who was in charge, and he wanted to get on the boat. He wanted to get out. All the women and children were supposed to get on the boat first. I don't know if you remember that scene, one of the characters.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking
to
this guy, why doesn't he have the right to live? He should be able to live too, you know, even though he looked kind of creepy about it, you know, and he pulled a gun and all this crap. But, you know, that's the human instinct. That's when you want to live and survive. That's how you should feel when someone's holding your head underwater, what it means to take your next breath and to, like, want to do something for yourself and just create abundance and create a world of, you know, whatever you want it to be. Just have someone hold your head in the water until you can't breathe, and then you tell me how much you really, truly want to live.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I agree. Sometimes we have to kind of have the fear of losing something before we can appreciate what we have or what we've achieved.
Right. I mean, I'm talking through extremes. I understand that. But sometimes we have to have extreme moments. You know, I mean, there's people who have lost their houses 3 or 4 times, and yet they do really well. They succeed. And then you have people who have a house, and they're not happy. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I think it's something inside of us that each one of us has that is very specific to us. that causes us to survive. And you're talking fear is a big, big, big thing. It causes us to actually sink or swim. You either can swim in the fear and fight through it, or it'll crush you.
Yes.
Slowly crush you.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get overwhelmed with all the fear and propaganda that's out there, and sometimes the noises in our head get rattling so much that it can be
hard
to keep grounded and not freaking out.
The voices in our head are much more real to us than anybody telling us that we're going to be okay. You know, we listen to ourselves 24/7, and to have that peaceful moment to even, it's real. You know, they talk about depression. Yeah, it's real in your head, but you know, when you start to look outside of you and look at you and examine you, it's not real. It's something that you've created. It's something that it becomes physically and debilitates you and causes your mind to shut down, because it's a story that has been repeated and is ingrained into your flesh, into your soul, into your spirit. And no human being can probably ever get you out of it unless you're ready and willing to move out of it. But the problem is, we don't know how to move out of it. A lot of us get stuck in there. But no one wants to believe that it's just a story. Everything that we do is a story. Yesterday was a story. The story of us doing the radio show together, the three of us, was a story now. It's gone. It's over. It's done. We'll never live that moment again. That moment is done. Only how we perceive it in our mind. And we couldn't even reconstruct it if we wanted to look exactly the way we did it yesterday.
Right, right. It was like an entity born of the feelings and the energies we had at that moment. And somebody had a great quote. I don't remember who it is. They said that, you know, 98% of the stuff we worry about or fear are things that are never going to happen, or they're things that have happened in the past and aren't going to happen again.
Right.
And it is, you know, you just look at how much we worry and fret over things. And it's like, am I saying nothing bad ever is going to happen? No. We're all going to have bad things that happen. But I can guarantee you, in most cases, it's not going to be the stuff you're worrying about. It's going to be something totally unexpected.
Right.
So no use destroying the now, just endlessly fretting and worrying about stuff that either is never going to happen or that happened, you know, 17 years ago or whatever.
Right. Well, number one, ask yourself, how many bad things happened to you today? And why do you call them bad? You know, to me, today, I lost my keys. But, you know, maybe somebody else might say, oh, my God, that's terrible. No, that was supposed to be. I lost my keys, but I found them 2 hours later. You know, after my walk, I had to retrace my steps. But you know what? In that moment, I was thinking, you know what? Maybe there's a reason why I lost my keys. Maybe I need to be out in nature a little bit longer. Maybe I was going to be in a very serious accident. I don't know. I don't know any of the possibilities of what could have happened, because they never occurred. But the only thing I know is I was on this mission, on this journey to find my keys. And, you know, I did find my keys. And I was relieved when I found them, because I can go where I need to go, be where I need to be, you know, do what I have to do, be in the world in a different way. But I got to experience the world in a different way at that moment, to see things that I may have not seen or observed. I mean, the world rolls and moves. There's birds that fly every day. There's clouds that fly over our heads. The sun will never be shining on certain things at the same position. The leaf on this tree in front of me is going to fall and won't be there tomorrow. I mean, just everything that happens in this world is a unique situation at every millisecond that happens. That, you know, sometimes we're so stuck in the crap that we just want to, you know, want the world to know. And you know what? The world doesn't care what if you got crap, you know? Because if the world cared, we wouldn't be doing the crap we're doing all over the world. But this tree drops its leaves every day, little by little, and eventually it'll be naked and exposed into the cold, you know? And then next spring it does its thing again. And we have to be like that. We have to be strong like the tree. Get blown around a little bit, lose a couple leaves and branches, you know? Maybe get a couple bug inside. They're just like us. They suffer, they go through stuff, but they don't have the same emotions we have. We have a different emotion, but they have emotions, they have feelings. And eventually they die, and we die. But they had a purpose. They stood tall, strong, shaded, gave life to other animals. There's a whole microcosm on these trees that I'm looking at. So we're a microcosm. We carry a microcosm upon our body. So if you don't think you're worthy, think of all the worthiness things that live on you, that depend on you to survive and to be alive and to experience the next day. You know, through your blood courses, amazing stuff. Through every breath you take in all kinds of crap, and then you blow it out. Some of it stays with you. That's the world. That's the world we live in. We're all connected, all my relations. We're not separate from anything. We feel separate and we look separate because we live in these box, these matchbox homes that we think we're, no one's going to see us and no one's going to know what we're doing. But yet, we're all doing the same shit. Some of us are turning on the TV. Some of us are turning on the computer. Some of us are all sitting on the toilet at the same time. We don't even know it. That'd be kind of cool to think about. We all flush at the same time. But you know what I'm saying. The point is, life is to be enjoyed to the best of your ability within the responsibilities of also caring for yourself and caring for others and caring for the family you create, your friends, and help them the best you can without hurting yourself.
Yep, totally agree. So it's important to have some perspective. Okay, so
I'm glad trees don't complain. I'm glad trees don't complain.
Yes.
They're pretty big and strong.
Yes. Okay, so I believe our guest is on the line here.
All right.
So today our guest is our good friend Thomas Moon Eagle, and if you're in the Central Ohio area, you've probably seen or talked to him at some of the expos. He often works at Tom Stone's booth. Our good friend Tom Benedict, who our prayers go out to him as he's healing from an illness he has. Thomas was on our show a few months ago, and he has a new ebook out, and it is called Drumming Down the Runes, Walking the 24 Roads, and you can get it on Amazon. You can get the Kindle edition, or you can get the Nook edition off Barnes & Noble, and that's posted in the chat room, if you're in the chat room today. And so we're going to have him tell us a little bit about his ebook, and I believe he's got a hard copy edition that he'll be working on as well. So good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Thomas.
Yes.
Hey. Yes. Now you put the screws to me. I have to get that hard copy out now.
Gentle pressure can be good sometimes.
Yeah, I gave myself a break while I was on the road. I promised I would not work on the book at all while I was traveling. And now I'm home. And I'm like, oh, I guess I have to work on that now.
So tell us a little bit about, this is about the Norse runes of the Viking tradition. So tell us, how did you stumble across this?
Oh, let's see. Years ago, I worked in a bookstore, and they had it on, their New Age section was against the wall, and right on the top shelf, they had, you know, the Book of Runes, and they had it turned to the side. You know how it had the clear, at one point, the package had the clear cellophane on the back, and so you could see the rune tiles, and I just kind of fell in love with that. I was like, oh, you know, I want to get those, and I did, and, you know, I love the feel of them. You know, I love cards, too. I love the pictures of the tarot and some of the oracle decks. But there's a real tactile sensation to runes. They're very visceral in that sense. And there's just something. And, of course, I also work in clay. I didn't at the time, but, you know, now I really understand that. And I've made my own set from clay. And there's a vibration of feeling the runes in your hand and putting your hand down into the pouch and pulling them out and drawing them out one at a time. That is, it's very different from tarot, and it has sort of it really has that sort of ancient mystical feel. And the runes are older than the tarot system by, you know, there's different agreements about when the runes came about. You know, I think somebody said that, you know, some scholar thinks as much as like over, you know, 2,000 years before the Common Era. And others, you know, I think it's either older or younger. It depends on the opinion. There's no real agreement. But, I mean, the tarot didn't really come into, as we know it, into existence until almost the Renaissance, really. So there is that feeling of ancientness about it, and you know how people get something that's really old, it has a draw to it, it has a vibration. But you know, I got those runes, and for many years I couldn't use them.
Really?
You know, you get a tool, you're really like excited, you try to read with them, and nothing.
Well,
and it was years. Actually, more like a decade and a half before I was actually able to use them in readings. And by that time, I had been practicing some shamanistic techniques. And one of my teachers clued us into the fact that you could journey to the runes. You know, even journeying anything. You can take a shamanic journey and journey to just about anything. Anything you can think of, you can do it. You can go talk to that vibration of whatever. You can go talk to your front door, the spirit of your front door, if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done that, but I know you can. And it'd be a very interesting perspective, considering, you know, people come in, come out, and, you know, that everything passes through that. But I had this idea in the back of my head for a while, like, gee, if, you know, if you journey to all of them, that would make a pretty cool book, you know, to have that experience of each of the 24 runes. And what would that be like, you know? So that sort of set on the back burner for a couple of years. So that's how I came to it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I get I see sparklies around things when I'm in the the new age stores, and I get the stuff, and then sometimes I'm like, it doesn't jive with me for, you know, when I get home, so I set it aside and then go, you know, a few months or sometimes a few years later, I'm like, you run across it and you're like, oh yeah, I meant to play with this, I meant to figure this out, and then it's you know, kind of pick it up, and then you're like, oh, this is why I got this. I like, you know, like your spirit tells you that you need it, but you don't quite have maybe the knowledge or the understanding of it at the time until something else clicks. I'm famous for that with books and music too. I'm like, I know I need to have this, but I'm not sure why yet.
Yeah, well, the spirit is sort of outside of time and space, so. It's like, you need this, but, you know, the whole idea of now to it is a little different because it's always now for spirit, and you're now and it's now, maybe days apart, minutes apart, or years or decades apart.
Right.
Yep. That's so true.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, it's been, well, you know, it's been a journey, actually quite a few of them, but... to, you know, it took a whole year to do those journeys. And when I started, I had really, really naive expectation that I would do one a week. And within 24 weeks, I would get that done, and then I would take a month or two to write the book, and it would be out in time for summer. And it didn't happen that way. It took literally the whole year to do the journeys. Like, I was in my office on December 31st thinking, I've got one more to do, and I have to do it today because I want to get this all. I had this fixation that all the journeys should be done within 1 year's time frame. So,
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's good. That's good. So, yeah, sometimes we think all this stuff's going to come easy or immediately to us, and it's like, you know, spirit kind of tells us to slow down a little bit sometimes because we're going to miss something.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's like, yeah, you know, trying to, you know, fast is not necessarily best. And, you know, you'd think it, from teaching Tai Chi, I would know that, but sometimes I need a reminder.
So, Thomas, this Iggy yes. here. Hey, real quick, yes. Well, I'm on the phone, so if that's fine. I don't want to interrupt your. Why don't you explain to us, to our listeners, because not all our listeners are always on the metaphysical plane and understand what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
what the runes are about, what that actually is, so they have maybe give them a little clarity, might get somebody
okay.
excited there.
Sure. Well, runes, I found out later after having written the book, and I was like, this would have been a cool little information to put in there as far as, you know, in the introduction that it comes from the root word runa, which means a secret or a mystery. So already you have that sort of vibration of, oh, this is mysterious, this is, you know, hidden. But they're basically, the runes are, they're not technically an alphabet because an alphabet goes like A, B, C, D, you know, and the runes start with F, U, no, I'm not kidding, sort of a T-H. It really does. Well, F-U/V, because the U is also used sometimes for V. So kind of like in the Roman, you know, the Romans used the V interchangeably as a U and a V, as also the number 5. And, you know, you have this thyrsos, which is like a T-H sort of sound. Then it goes A, R, and a C or K, depending. They don't have one that's different. So it's C and K both. And so it's called a futhark rather than an alphabet. But, you know, it's, for most people, you can just call it the Norse alphabet, really. It's the Norse letters. It's the basic phonemes for those particular languages in the Scandinavian area and Germanic. I mean, and there's different rune systems. Like the Viking runes, the ones that's that were popularized by Ralph Bloom a couple decades ago, when there was this revival of interest in them, are particularly the Norse Elder Futhark, the Viking runes. But there were Anglo-Saxon runes, Germanic runes. There's a whole bunch of different runic systems throughout Europe. And, you know, it was a writing system. It was also used to mark land holdings, like a particular rune would be associated with, oh, this is this person's land. You know where we have a sign at the X on contracts?
Uh-huh.
That actually is originated from the runes, because you remember a long time ago, people did not read and write, and so they would use the X to mark their agreement. And that X is actually the rune Gebo, which actually is related to agreements and balance and fairness. And
okay.
That is, you know, that's sort of a holdover that's kind of, you know, come through. We don't even think about where that comes from. But that's kind of where that comes from, is this, you know, this means a contract and or an agreement or a truce or something, those two lines crossing. So it had that aspect. People would, you know, put them on their weapons, on their shields to empower them. You know, they might draw it on the earth to sort of cast a spell. The idea of casting a spell is literally they would spell out the letters for the effect they wanted. So we get that, you know, that's sort of the origin of that. But each of the runes is also tied to different primal aspects or primal archetypes. So like Uruz, which is the second one, which is that UV, is associated with the wild aurochs, which is extinct now, but it was this wild oxen. It was very strong, very powerful. Let me think of, let's see, Knaz, which is the C/K, was associated with the torch fire. So they have very elemental, very primal things. Burkana, which is the bee rune, was associated with the birch tree. So they were really tied to the landscape and to the primal elements. So it's the tarot has a lot of human archetypes and celestial archetypes in it. The runes have what I call primal archetypes. They're based in the earth. They're based in the land and the sea. And so there it's a different, it's a denser vibration than the runes. And that doesn't necessarily, you know, some people associate it with, you know, bad, you know. It's sort of like, you know, the root chakra has a denser vibration than the crown chakra. Is the root chakra bad? No. It's, it's part of the whole spectrum. In fact, if you've seen the big crystal singing bowls, my favorite is actually the root chakra bowl. When you sound it, it just, to me, it has the vibration of a temple. And that, for me, I guess, is, you know, the body is considered the temple, and that's the, you know, the root of the body. It's where the spirit, you know, the seed of the divine is, sparks right at the root. And it's, you know, that is very important, to tend to the roots of things. And I feel like the runes are like that as well. It's, you know, very, it's very grounded, very based in the earth, and the spirit of the earth, which is, you know, no less sacred than the spirit of the skies and the stars. That's just different. I hope that is a good explanation to people.
Yeah, it's important. I know sometimes when we do our shows, we get on a tangent, and we're like, some people are like new to this stuff and they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, it's just always nice to kind of give a little explanation. You don't know that stuff? Come on.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's really funny, you know, I think, because, you know, when you hang out in different circles, you know, you're just talking about stuff and matter-of-factly, and then you go and you don't realize how far out of mainstream you are until you talk to somebody, and you say something that's just completely normal to you, and they're just looking at you like you've grown a second head, and I'm like, oh, that's right. Oh, God.
Oh, my God, how many times has that happened to me?
Yeah.
What? They go, what? Nothing.
Yeah, the idea of being able to talk with spirits and to be able to experience that and to get information back and forth is just so wild and out there to most people in the mainstream. And you know, or doing a reading is so wild and out there in the mainstream. And I look at that as, like, so normal. It's almost, I don't want to say, you know, what's the word? It's, you know, it gets old hat after a while. Just like, look, there's nothing, you know, particularly mystical about it to me. I mean, there's occasionally things that come out of those that's like, wow, that really get, you know, back interested in doing it today. But most of the time, it's, you know, it's fairly, it becomes routine. And, you know, and there's good things about that, and there's bad things about that. I think every now and again, we need a little bit of shaking up to remind ourselves, hey, this is sacred and not everybody experiences this.
Right.
And, you know, pay attention and be grateful. Be grateful that you're able to do this. I, you know, I forget, you know, how lucky I am to be able to do some of the things I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And have some of those resources. And there's, of course, always, you know, more that you can learn and more that you can reach towards and strive to be and strive to, you know, ground in. There's a lot of talk. I'm not against ascension at all. I think it's a good, I think it's cool. But my thing is to ground stuff in. I'm sort of on the embodiment side of things. I want to embody the energies, not like transcend the energy, but like, you know, and rise up, because I'm like, we're here. And rather than reaching up, I feel like we just need to pull down those energies in the body. And some people who are really heavily into ascension, and, you know, they, I think they mean that, they just don't mention it.
Right.
A lot of when people start in, they're just, you know, they're like, their heads are like floating out there, and, you know, and they have these wonderful experiences, and then they come back in, and none of that translates. And, you know, it's sort of like the Greek versus the Roman sort of mindset. In the ancient world, the Greeks were like the philosophers, the natural scientists, and the Romans were the engineers. I mean, that's, and I think you need both, you know.
yeah, absolutely.
Right. I have to completely, totally agree with you on that. I kind of ran. I started running across a lot of the Ascension stuff about a year and a half ago, and I think it is happening and everything, but mm-hmm. I think you're totally spot on that there's maybe some misconceptions as to what we're supposed to do with it as I go further along that path. Because it's almost like we get too focused on getting out of here instead mm-hmm. of grounding that energy to, I mean, we didn't come down here to try and get out as soon as possible. I don't really think that was the point.
Yeah, so they call that suicide.
right. Yeah.
Which does not have a good vibration.
I think you're spot on that the key here is to ground and bring those ascension energies down here with us, not us trying to get sucked up into those,
mm-hmm.
if I get that properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have the symptoms, Mark? You don't have the ascension symptoms?
Oh yeah. Good reading.
If I hear that one more time, I'm gonna scream, okay? That's one of those things I mean.
Actually,
symptoms, Iggy. I'm like, no, just shut up, man. I'm touching the tree right now.
There's the misconception, I think, that everything was just gonna go perfectly, no one's going to piss us off, no one's going to do anything nasty, no one's gonna do this, and I'm like, last I checked, free will was still the king of the day, you know? So, you know, those people are going to act nasty. And, you know, I saw somebody on the forum say, you know, I don't know why I even bother being nice because people don't do this, do that. And I basically told them, I said, you're being nice because that's kind of who you are. And, you know, if you're expecting, you know, people to be a certain way because of that, then you're not really nice. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, we look to the world to tell us who we are, and then we get dissatisfied with what they say. But we do. I mean, and I do it too. I like, you know, we see ourselves and other people and how we relate to them and how they treat us, and you know, but it's. I think, you know, there's that real misconception that, you know, we're going to be happy all the time, that we're never going to experience loss.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if anyone actually reads my blog. I know a few of my friends do, which means that I don't have to watch what I say. But, but, you know, I just recently was informed that one of my positions is going away, and I was just, you know, you think, oh, Thomas, you're so advanced. That you must have been like immediately, wow, this is a new journey for me. Oh, hell no. I was in that, like, I got fired. I failed. You know, I went right into that, you know, cause, and that's what you do because, you know, you're a human being and you have emotions and, you know, we feel loss and we feel rejection and it sucks. And, you know, and I feel like you have to feel those things. To be fully, you know, relevant. I mean, if you never feel those things, how are you going to relate to somebody who's going through something? You know, I just wish that the universe would stop using me as a way for me to relate to everyone I'm sending out vibrations to. So I get to live all of that for the whole group, and then I send out prayers for it, you know. And they, people always say, how do you know what the prayer focus is going to be? I'm like, well, it's what came up for me this week. And apparently it's what everybody else needed. I'm like, you know, couldn't the universe just tell me what the prayer focus is? Just like, you know, have it come like little words across the field of my vision instead of me having to live every single one of those things. But apparently at this point in time, no.
Right. Right.
You know. And, you know, some of the leading teachers in the fields of metaphysics and spiritual thought and healing, if you look at their personal lives, they have a lot of peaks and valleys. You know, and I've seen this again and again. I have friends who find, like, the biggest teachers in the field, and, you know, and they investigate them. Sometimes I follow along and learn some things from them, too. But they get into the circle there, and they know what's going on. And I hear all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God. That's dramatic, you know. And, it, you know, if you don't want drama, you know, you need to stop breathing. Because that's going to happen. I mean, and there's, you know, people say, I don't want, you know, usually the people screaming, I don't want any more drama in my life are usually the people that are the most dramatic. And I've just said, you know, I just want my life to be a comedy. And if you look at comedies, there is dramatic stuff that happens in comedies, but there's, you know, that it's infused with, you know, the humor, and it's infused with joy, and there's the happy ending, and perhaps possibilities for more hijinks later. So I think that refocus is like, you know, I want it to be comedy, not necessarily a dark comedy either, but just, you know.
That's a good take. That's a great take.
You
and
I
had this conversation before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had this conversation before. You know, what we manifest, you know, just our speaking our voice, and then the universe hears everything. So it doesn't matter what we say, it hears everything. You know, it's kind of just delivered to you like a pizza.
Here it is. You heard it here first, universe. My life is a comedy.
Yeah.
I am not the punchline.
Yeah.
Right.
I am something else. I am the main character. I am committed to the idea that the universe is laughing with me, not at
right.
Unless it's Coyote, and then it's generally laughing at me.
Coyote has purpose too.
Yeah, he does, but he's always laughing at me every time I see him. The first time I ever encountered Coyote in a journey, he looked at me, he said, it's you, and then he proceeded to laugh for like 5-10 minutes. And I had a purpose for this journey that I was in a class, and I was like, I just talked to my parent and was like, get him to do something besides point and laugh at me, because we have an assignment. I was like, but yeah, so I renamed him Laughing Dog, and the name has stuck. So, but he showed up again recently, and I'm like, it's bound to get entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
he does the stuff that nobody else wants to do.
Well, yeah, and, you know, there's the beautiful thing about Coyote, or the terrible thing about Coyote, depending on your perspective, is that he doesn't really care what other people think.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, for me and, you know, a lot of people who are empathic, we do care. We care way too much. And it can be kind of paralyzing. And so, you know, maybe he'll lend me a little bit of that, you know, don't care, you know, not that we don't want to run around hurting people kind of thing, but that, you know, if it's just people's opinions, if it's just what people think about us, then no, it's not really important, you know. So I'm hoping that I will learn that in a fun way, if possible.
Good old Coyote.
Yeah. Super genius.
I like Coyote.
You know.
Yeah, so in the description for your book here, it says, easy to follow instructions, teach readers to journey to find their power animal. How do you like use the runes to help? Because I kind of get that question a lot, where people want to know what their spirit guides are, and you know, I'm very interested in animal totems and power animals and stuff. So how do the runes work? If I were speaking English, to help in conjunction with power animals and totems.
Okay. Well, what I do is I teach people, you have to know how to journey before you can journey to the runes, obviously. So, and generally the first journey that people do is down to the lower world to find their power animal. And, you know, I walk people through that in, like, the introduction, and there's a section on shamanism and explaining what shamanism is, some of the main tenets of it, some of the practices. And then there's, you know, they get to learn how to set sacred space, and then, you know, the basics of journeying, you know, finding their power animal first. And because that's really the first thing you need, because your power animal does play so many roles for you. I mean, they protect you. They empower you. To, you know, in so many ways, you know, they can physically heal you. They can give you information. They can correct you in a loving way. they really are good at that. They can help you find any, you know, so much information, and they can make introductions for you. Sometimes with the rune spirits, what I would do, I would watch to see how my power animal would interact with them, to see, you know, what kind of relationship can I expect from this rune. You know, and if my, you know, it was always a good sign when mine would lay down at one of the spirit's feet and just sort of like loll and you know, kind of rub against them. That was generally a good sign that this one was particularly trustworthy. And I could let my guard down a little bit.
Right.
But, you know, the rune spirits themselves, I mean, they were, certainly I could have gone to the upper world to encounter them if I wanted to, or the middle world. The problem with that, because, you know, if you'd gone to the upper world, you would have been interacting with sort of the deity forms that are associated, because each of the runes also has, you know, mythological and deity associations. So I could learn about them through that. I made the very conscious choice that I wanted to interact with them on the most primal level, which is the lower world, where you have the spirits of, like, animals and plants and stones, and places like, you know, a spirit of a place you have in the lower world. And I felt like that really matched kind of my idea of them as primal archetypes. And there was also the bonus that nobody can lie in the lower world, as opposed to the middle world, as we all know, because we live in one that, you know, deceit and treachery is, you know, part of the mix. You know, I can lie, you can lie, we can all lie. Some of us do it better than others. Some of us do it really well to ourselves. But in the lower world, you know, you don't have that, you know. People don't have to answer you, they don't have to interact with you, but if they do, what they say is true. So, you know, and, you know, the power animals, lower world is like their backyard. So it's, I learned from a book, but I learned how to more effectively interact and relate with my power animal by working in a shamanic circle with other people. And I bring that up. I was like, you know, you can learn this and do this on your own. It's more effective if you learn it with other people. I believe because, you know, there's an intentionality that happens when a group of people gather in circle and journey together. I mean, it's very powerful. And it can be very, you know, heart-opening, and you get those wow moments, like, oh, I saw that too. Which if you're, you know, journeying by yourself, you don't get, because, you know, you're there with yourself and your power animal, and that's it. So, but you can do it. And I did it for years without, you know, having the benefit of doing it in a group of people. And I did all of these journeys by myself in my office to each of the rune spirits. But that was after several, you know, like 7 years of, you know, shamanic training off and on, you know, different classes, going together and doing shamanic groups, doing an intensive initiation program, which really, I feel like it gave me the chops to write and to be confident in what my experience was. My hope in writing the book, and I wrote it sort of as a way that you can follow along and you can take these journeys as well and come up with your own answers, and then you can compare them to mine, and maybe they match, maybe they don't, and that's okay. But it's almost, in some parts of it are like the rune chapters themselves. You can do almost like a workbook. And I hope that people will do that, just because it will deepen their relationship with the energies and the spirits of the runes. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's all about relationships, you know. Uh-huh. And particularly shamanism, it's, you know, how we relate, you know, to spirit and to the world and to each other and ourselves. So anytime you can build relationships and deepen relationships, you know, there's more power there. So.
Mark, do we have any callers online?
We have one person. Let me see. We have one person that's been hanging out there. Let's see if they have a question for our guest here. Hello, caller.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Do you have a question for one of us or for our guest?
Yeah, I was just wondering a little bit about what do you just get a feeling or a sense when you try to start with runes about what runes to choose, or is there a certain one that you should start out with?
Okay. Is that question for me?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes. I specifically did the structure in the order of the Futhark, meaning, you know, like we go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I went in the order of their alphabet because I thought, you know, there's a reason for that structure. So I started at the beginning and went through to the end. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I was listening to you explain that earlier. I just said, you know, I've been hanging on. I might as well get a little confirmation just in case.
Okay, good. Yeah, I had, of course, look up the order because we're so used to A, B, C, D, E, F, G that, you know, I knew the first six because, you know, that's what it's called, the Futhark, you know, and those are the first six letters. But after that, I was kind of fuzzy. So...
Yeah, I'll have to look into your book.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Can I just hang on listening? Because my phone's not streaming you guys correctly.
Yeah, I can just put you back on hold and or on mute, and you'll be able to listen like you were.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the call.
Wonderful. I was glad it was a question I knew the answer to.
So, Thomas, do you find any correlation between the runes and shamanism? Because you and I both are students of shamanism. And uh-huh. So do you find, I mean, I've used runes before in the past, but they don't seem to attract me as much as maybe to you, but do you find any correlation with it?
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the old Germanic and Norse cultures, they had, you know, their own kind of spirit workers, and they did work with animal spirits, kind of. It's not as overt sometimes. If you look at Norse mythology, you know, Odin had the two ravens, Hugin and Munin, that has sort of, you know, almost like a totem aspect to it. So, and they had particular animals that meant certain things. You know, the bear was just like in North America, you know, very powerful. and they had the berserkers, which came from the word bear sark, and sark was like a skin. So they would wear the bear skins, and they would take on the ferocity of the bear and go, you know, and hence the term berserker. And they were the most feared and fierce warriors. And so that's sort of an aspect of shape-shifting, which is pretty universal in shamanism across the globe. Mm-hmm. There's some aspect of shape-shifting or taking on the aspects of an animal spirit. So, I mean, there is that correlation. And there's divination methods in just about every type of shamanic culture as well. And it just, this is what came about from this. And I think they used to, like, cut strips of sticks and cast them and see what runes appeared. And so, there was a particular traditional method in which runes were cast, which is different than how we do them, or at least different than how I do. I'm not that fancy. I just have people draw them from the back,
right.
Which works. But there used to be a whole ceremony and, you know, a way of doing it, you know, facing different directions and doing that. And so there is a correlation to it. They would journey, you know, they had instead like the three worlds that we have in core shamanism. And realize that core shamanism is sort of like an amalgamation of indigenous cultures all over the world and basically distilling it into the similarities. So each culture would have slightly different things to it, but there were some things that were usually common. And that's what core shamanism is like it's sort of like the generic brand of shamanism. That sounds bad. It's not. I know generic has like sort of a bad feel to it, but it's sort of like your blank slate that you can follow and create your own path. And that's what's wonderful about it, is that you can take the core teachings of shamanism and find the path that your spirit wants to travel and find where your power is and chart your own course. So people will find, you know, just will have the same basic, you know, starting knowledge, and they will come up with vastly different practices. And it's really based on them and what, you know, where their heart lies and what they choose to pursue. So that's what's beautiful about it, is that you can be from any culture, and it can work for you. You know, you can be just about any religion and follow a shamanic path. And really, it's about seeking direct relationship with spirit and seeking to work with spirit. So that is, you know, and that's what, you know, and the goal of many religions is to reconnect us with spirit and to reconnect us with grace. And shamanism is just, it's sort of like the spiritual version of the scientific method, where you try stuff and you see what works for you.
So that's
what
I would say.
I like it. It's good.
Awesome. So I'm on a little bit of a hard stop here today. So Thomas, tell people how they can get a hold of you or get a copy of your book.
The book is on Amazon under the title Drumming Down the Runes, Walking the 24 Roads. It's currently available as an ebook on Kindle, and it's also available through Barnes & Noble Nook. There's a Nook version as well, and in the upcoming months, there will be a print-on-demand version as well. So I'm still working on that one. I'm going to get the formatting just right before I submit that. And I have a website. It's thomasmooneagle.com. I also have a YouTube channel under Thomas Moon Eagle. And you can find links to both of those places in either And there's also, I put out a weekly blog as well. And there's links to that on both my YouTube channel and on my website.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Thank you for spending some time with us today and teaching us a little bit about runes.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And we look forward to seeing you at the next expo.
Yep. I'll be at Victory of Light in November, and I'll actually be speaking, I believe, on the Saturday about ancestral healing, I believe is what I'm talking about that time. So.
Awesome. We'll have to, I think we were kind of planning on going down there for that this year. I've been meaning to check that out and haven't made it down there yet.
It's a lot of fun. There is so much to see down at Victor's Fair.
Yes, I've heard that. We will try and make the what do you know what the dates are on that offhand?
I think they're the 21st and the 22nd. I can, if you give me just a moment, I can check the calendar. I've got it put down there somewhere. It is. It's the 21st and the 22nd, and I will be speaking on the 21st.
Cool.
Okay, fantastic.
All right, brother. Thank you for being on with us. We really appreciate you. Anytime you want. Yeah, anytime you want. Give us a call. Let us know.
All right. Thanks, Iggy. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Take care.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, some cool information there.
Good interview. I always enjoy Thomas. Got a lot of fountain of knowledge.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I always stop and talk to him at Tom's booth at the local expos here.
Awesome.
Okay, so I'm gonna continue the busy schedule here today. So
all right.
I think does Monty have a show on Thursday night?
Well, tomorrow there is. I think there's a. There's a Naked Shaman, once a month Naked Shaman show. So that'll be in the evening sometime, I'm not sure yet. And I think Monty, as long as I get my computer back,
okay,
it will be a show. If not, then she'll just have to call in herself and just talk a little bit. But and you have a big guest coming up on Friday, right?
Yeah, I have my good friend Robert Phoenix, who has had a very successful blog talk show that has a pretty big following for I don't know how long he's been doing. I think 5 or 6 years or something anyways.
Okay,
so he will be my guest on Friday, and we will be talking some astrology, some sports astrology, some esoteric symbolism, and undoubtedly some conspiratorial stuff. It will be
very good.
I promise.
Very good.
Yeah,
all
okay.
Right, well, then I will say ho'oponopono and have a good afternoon and rest of the week, and I will see everybody next time.
All right, we'll talk to everyone soon. Ciao.
All right, ciao.
Bye.
the end of the world.